Welcome guys, this is Dragos back on the Laboratory Energy Podcast. Since this time around we have Mohit Minhas, who is an Indian comedian based out of Berlin, and we're currently having a conversation about his plans of returning back to India to do full-time comedy. We talk about the Indian stand-up comedy scene, we talk about how it's developed, we talk about the opportunities, the potential, and how Mohit's future is currently going to look like. So please enjoy this particular podcast with Mohit Minhas. Okay, welcome to the Labrador Energy Podcast. Today here we have Mohit here. He's an up-and-coming comedian of Indian descent. And Mansi here, unfortunately, doesn't have a mic. But I'm going to sit close to her when she ever says something.
Yeah, Mansi will be an up-and-coming comedian in the future when she decides to, after her Toastmasters.
Yes.
Gets done, yeah. And she's starting with her
Toastmasters?
Yeah.
Very good. It's a good way to get a little public speaking experience, right?
Yeah.
So we're just hanging around, chilling. It's still Diwali, is that correct?
It is always Diwali.
Always Diwali. That's the kind of mindset you should have in life, you know?
Yeah.
And we started the podcast, the recording, as we were talking about the rise of comedy in India.
Yeah, bro.
So tell us a bit more, Mohit. What do you think here?
It's massive. It's still a fairly new scene if you look at like the beginnings of it, because it's only been a scene for 8 years or so.
Yeah, in 8 years is a lot.
Yeah, it's come so far.
Mm.
It's an industry now, like. Comedians are now getting booked to produce stuff for brands. Comedians are now being asked to write for TV.
Mm.
The kind of stuff that we see in the US, for example, with the exception of maybe like late night shows, that's
right.
The thing that's still...
So does India have late night shows?
There is one. There's one called Comedy Nights with Kapil, which actually... It's not
Kapoor.
So good. Kapil.
Okay.
Who's technically a comedian. Like, he qualifies.
Okay.
But I mean, it's not like the American late night shows where... You and I would feel like watching and catching up on episodes.
Right.
So that's a topic where maybe like, you know, we're going to make strides. But apart from that...
But the question with late night shows is like, the only late night shows that I watch are like John Oliver and then Trevor Noah. And a lot of times because they talk about things that are relevant in terms of politics. Yeah. I don't watch like Seth Meyers or whatever the fuck that like, I don't watch Samantha Bee or whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah. But still, I mean, like, a lot of people do. And like you mentioned like two shows right now. Conan is like a decent show.
Right.
Stephen Colbert is a decent show. But like what I'm trying to say is like America still has a culture of like those late night sort of shows.
Right.
Which has not really come to India.
Right.
But I'm just like nitpicking here because apart from the late night shows, there's like everything else is just fucking booming, dude.
Right.
Like I have friends, multiple friends, like maybe who are like been doing stand up for like 4 years and stuff. And they just... Every time they put out a clip on YouTube, for example, just a 5-minute clip about, I don't know, being middle class in India.
Right.
They get like a million, two, three, four
really?
Million views on YouTube.
I mean, that's Indian privilege right
there. That's Indian privilege right there. But it doesn't lead up to anything.
Right.
So
I mean, if you monetize the YouTube video, you can still lead up some money, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely like enough to maybe make, I don't know, rent it for a month or so. You are the YouTube expert here.
Right.
But...
I mean, I can tell you how much I make as a YouTuber at the moment. Guys, follow me on YouTube. Okay, so in the past month, with about 20,000 views in that month across all the videos, made about 30 euros.
20,000 views, 30 euros.
Yeah, so basically...
How many of them were like from a click farm in...
in Bangalore. All of it's organic and it's basically just... Oh, wait, to be honest, all of it's been funneling from TikTok to YouTube.
Yeah.
Because basically I have small videos on TikTok, and then I say, if you want to see the long format video, come to YouTube.
Yeah.
So a lot of the people, I ask them, like, they comment on the videos, how did you find out about the video? They're like, I saw it on TikTok.
Nice.
So that's been my acquisition strategy.
Because
it's so difficult to get people to, you know, the SEO is difficult to kind of pick up. No, nobody's searching for Romanian English stand-up comedy, you know?
Mm.
So it's kind of like
not yet.
But again, it's still pretty good. It's in terms of growth. I was doing a bit of research on how fast YouTube channels grow, and usually it takes people up to like 1,000. In order to get 1,000 viewers on a YouTube channel, it takes them 2 to 3 years.
Wow.
On average. So and I, you know, I've been doing it for now like about almost 10 months, and I have 5,000. So it's pretty decent in terms of the growth.
Yeah.
And I understand after 10,000, there's a bit more of a magic happening.
The algorithm like kind of unlocks those for you.
Yeah,
I've heard about all of these apps, dude. Like,
there's a threshold.
Yeah, right? Isn't it insane? Like how our kind of our financial well-being, our future as entertainers, is in the hands of these fucking apps and algorithms, which we have no fucking clue about.
According to their argument, it's in your hands and the quality of your content.
Yeah, but like, who knows what the TikTok algorithm is? Like, there's like 12 million guys writing about it, for sure. There's a lot of like videos about the TikTok algorithm on TikTok. But like, no one knows what it is apart from like maybe like one Chinese dude who's like locked up in
this is probably prison. True. And then now obviously a big part of the market has been cut off because TikTok is banned in India, right? Because
TikTok is banned in India. So like, Instagram Reels has now become the TikTok of India.
Right.
Yeah.
But are people still getting discovered as they were getting on TikTok?
Yeah, for sure, dude.
On Reels.
One of my very close friends is just blowing up on TikTok, on Instagram Reels now.
Really?
And that's opening up doors for him. Like,
with what? With stand-up or with...
With stand-up clips, just like really short clips, the way like we do on TikTok.
Right.
Just like tiny little clips. And it's the same amount of reach that we see on TikTok. Maybe more because it's India, you know, just...
Right. And just, Instagram already has the...
Yeah, I think it has changed a lot. Like, especially after the TikTok, I believe. Oh, thank you.
Can you just pass the microphone here?
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna be possible.
Okay,
thank you. So what I personally believe is like, for this online social media channels, once you reach like a particular limit of your subscribers, I think like after that the growth becomes very exponential.
Yeah.
So for example, if you have 1,000 followers, once you reach 5,000, the growth is even faster to get 10,000.
Yeah.
Right. I think the same thing happened for TikTok in India. Yeah. So for those who are already famous on TikTok, for them to get back on Instagram is like a big challenge.
Yeah, but now they're all getting back.
They have to start from the scratch, right?
Yeah, but they have to kind of get back because TikTok is banned and Instagram is just like literally the TikTok of India at this point. Yeah. And
actually, YouTube also started experimenting in India with YouTube Shorts.
Did
which
they?
Is like their version of
look at Dragos knowing more about India than
to be honest, it's more knowing more about the platform.
Yeah, more about the platform.
Yeah, because like I think, you know, YouTube has such a big recurrent user base that you know, them kind of like TikTok is clearly eating into their market, right? If you're not spending time on TikTok, you're spending time on YouTube, right?
Yeah.
So I think they wanted to get into that market. And it's interesting because, like, you know, if YouTube already has that massive user base, you can get that kind of distribution as TikTok. That'd be great. In terms of I remember, like, watching document, like, little kind of articles about people in India literally having their life changed overnight because of TikTok. Because they blew up on TikTok and then they were in a village or whatever. And they had like a little shitty Android phone, and all of a sudden they had 5 million followers.
Wow!
Do you know what I mean?
Like my view of TikTok is that, so I haven't really used TikTok personally a lot,
which is great.
But I have seen lots of shares on Instagram or Facebook that people share their TikTok videos and etc. Right? So what I felt is like people who go on creating this content by themselves, their first use of social media channel is TikTok.
Mm.
So for example, there are many people in villages, for example, they started creating these videos on TikTok. So they don't have experience with Facebook or Instagram. So for them, it might be a little bit of challenge to really, even if they have reached a lot of views on TikTok, it might be a little challenging for them to go on Instagram. So I think we have to see for India, especially, what is the channel which is most closest, which is the closest to TikTok, for example.
And I think also, if you were blew up on TikTok and you're from a village from India, going back to Instagram is demoralizing, right? Because you got to start back from zero.
Yeah.
You know, like you made it, you had people like buying your merch, you know?
Yeah, buying
your
merch.
And now you got to go back to zero.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Bro, no, there is no merch in India.
That was exactly my point.
Do you think people buy merch in India? They have buy merch. Some people buy merch.
People buy the merch that is cheapest, so it's not really brand loyalty.
Did they make their own merch with the logo of the person? Let's see. I don't know. So as an Indian comedian, you started a comedy. You started comedy in Berlin or?
I started comedy back in Mumbai, but I only did it for like 2-3 months back in Mumbai before I moved to Berlin.
Okay.
So the popping of the cherry was sort of in Mumbai, but then all of the encounters have been in Berlin.
Okay. So what would you say your feedback is so far doing? Have you done comedy in India after coming to Berlin?
Oh yeah, dude. Every time I go back, I actually definitely try to hit up the local scene.
How does that work out? Do the jokes translate? Is there a language barrier?
Well, there is certainly... I wouldn't say there's a language barrier. You do need to translate the jokes, but what I will say is this: look, you can do English comedy in India, and if you have an intelligent crowd, which, I mean, again, depends on the show and all those kinds of factors, you will get like good laughs.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, if you do it in Hindi,
mm-hmm.
you will blow up much faster.
But this is a larger market.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I don't know, like how they say German is not a language for comedy. German is just, there's something about the language that makes it not funny. I don't know what it is about Hindi, but it's like, at least Indian people, they love this shit.
Right.
And what a lot of Indian comedians are doing right now, for example, is they write their entire like setup in English with the punchline in Hindi.
Oh.
And that just like gets the crowds more than delivering the punchline in Hindi, for example.
It's a higher degree of familiarity.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
I've seen a couple of this actually.
Yeah.
I was watching a couple of guys and they were like, because he says like the whole punchline, the whole setup in English. Yeah. I'm like, okay. Yeah. And then I just don't get the...
Yeah.
The thing.
I agree with your point of familiarity, for example, right? Because even, for example, in India, Hindi is not the only language that is spoken, but many people know that language and many people know the like the most relevant or most known punchlines in Hindi. If you go like more in deeper to a particular state, for example, whether it's Maharashtra or any Tamil or something, if you use their punchline, the jokes will be received more by them. And this has happened with many comedians, for example, right? Hindi comedians speaking in Maharashtra, they use some Marathi punchline, which is in the local language, and people receive it more, you know, personally, and people appreciate it more.
Right. Are you Marathi? Marathi?
Yes.
Okay. I was gonna say, like, how do you know so much about Marathis?
Yeah, I just gave an example, example, but it's with all the states. It's
so to make it a bit more cultural. What's the difference? So Mohit, what would you say? Where are you?
I'm Punjabi.
Punjabi, and you're Marathi, yeah. So what's the difference there? Just for the cultural connoisseurs here. Are we getting into like the deep waters here?
Yeah, let's just say we have better food over there. They have better snacks. So
I have. Well, I agree with that. Like. I have to because this is the first thing I have to agree that you guys have better food, but we do have a lot of like a variety of snacks as compared to Punjabi people. So
okay, you know, I'm gonna use this. The title of this podcast is gonna be like Punjabi versus to get all the clickbait from India.
I would love that.
I hope I can represent the Punjabis enough. Because to be honest, my family is originally from Punjab.
Right.
My parents, my grandparents, they speak Punjabi very well.
Right. Do you speak any Punjabi?
I speak Punjabi like extremely broken.
Okay.
Like I can pass off as Punjabi in front of non-Punjabis, but if a Punjabi actually starts talking to me, I'll be like, bro,
panic.
You're fake.
Right.
So, my grandmom actually tried to teach me Punjabi quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, oh, I'll give you money if...
if
you learn this stuff. But she was such a sweet lady.
Is that how you motivate Indian people? I'll give you money if you do it.
Yeah, exactly. That's high motivation.
No, I agree.
Yeah. She was just like so sweet. She just gave me money, like even if I did not learn. So like I did not learn.
Interesting. So what does Marathi people speak?
We speak Marathi, and which is very I mean, you know, like obvious, right? But then for the Marathi people, I think that it's very close to Hindi, the language that they speak. Yeah. Even Punjabi is very close to Hindi, but like.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like all the languages are quite close, but the essence, like, kind of in Indian culture is divided by food.
Right.
Like, you know what we should do? Like, we should change the name of the podcast to Punjabi versus Marathi and also the topic to, like, not comedy, but
no,
instead, like,
comedy.
Let's switch to, like, what is better, Punjabi or Marathi?
I like how the Indian woman is taking over everything. Should I rename everything? Should I reclaim? I mean, you can also start a new podcast, but let's rename this one, you know?
But I'm getting more ideas about my next podcast, for example. What can I it be
hey,
about?
Hey, how about
right?
you split this one into like two?
yeah, we get the two. I mean,
I would love to argue about this topic, but even like getting back to the point, for example, of doing comedy in the local regions, I would say that even, say, Marathi people versus Punjabi people, like who do more comedy, I would see like they're on the equal level. Like,
okay, what's a famous Marathi comedian?
I think Nilesh, his name is Nilesh, he's a doctor actually, and Nilesh Sabre.
Parents must be proud.
Yeah, Nilesh Sabre actually, he's a doctor, but he moved to comedy scenes, and he has this really funny Marathi show called Chala Hawa Yodha or something, and it's a very funny show actually. They kind of create these acts from the movies. They also dress up as you know, those movie characters, and it's kind of funny and engaging. And it's a family show actually, so there is nothing like there is nothing that you cannot see with your family.
Doesn't sound like stand-up. Sorry, yeah, not, right? I was gonna say, but do you think he's making more money out of comedy than as a doctor?
I would say yes, because he is extremely famous in Maharashtra, and I being in Berlin, for example, I do watch these shows nowadays as well. So I totally agree with him making more money than being a doctor. I'm not very an expert in it, but I'm just guessing.
So you can still consume a lot of content from back home on YouTube, or how do you get the Marathi comedy content?
I refer to YouTube, totally. Yeah, there is no other channel that I can refer to, for example, staying in Berlin, but I do feel like, for example, that I should, as I said, like I should have a familiarity with the content more when I'm listening to a the comedy show, for example. So I would just go on YouTube and search for these videos.
Do you still watch a lot of content from back from India, or
stand-up content?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure, dude. I want to keep in track with the scene. And also, like, in terms of quality of content, there are quite a few pretty good comedians in India now. Like, the scene, as I said, it's like 8 to 10 years old. So quite a few people have actually stuck to the game for the love of the game. And they have gotten really good at it.
Who would you say are like the top-tier comedians, the Indian comedians at the moment?
So, well, the ones that you can find quite easily, check out Kanan Gill.
Let me tell you the ones that I know, right? Yeah. So, I know Veer Das is the number one. When I think of Indian comedians, I think of Veer Das, right? Because, like pure Indian comedians, not like Hasan Minhaj, like Russell Peters or anything like that, right? I think of Veer Das because Veer Das has, like, the most presence on YouTube, on, like, Netflix. Yeah. Then I think of Kanan Gill is the second one. And I think, I don't know which one the third one would be. Like, I can't think of any female Indian comedian that I know of that's large. Is there anyone
Aditi Mittal is a female.
I know the name. Yes.
Netflix, yeah. There's a few Indian comedians who, I mean, you can find some of them on Netflix. You can find some of them on Amazon. But you can certainly find all of them on YouTube. And there are quite a few people who are just kind of like in the making right now. So they have not put out a lot of content.
Right.
Maybe. But you can see that they're going somewhere. So there is, I mean, there's this guy named Manik Mana, who's on YouTube. I think he has two clips on YouTube. And by the way, magic of the Indian stand-up comedy scene. Two clips on YouTube, and I think he has 500,000 subscribers.
Really?
On YouTube.
500,000
subscribers on YouTube.
Well, what are the clips about? Do you know what the clips are about?
So, like, he hit the perfect recipe, so to speak. So, his two clips, one of them is about... like how, like being middle class in college used to be for a North Indian person who's like, he's talking in Hindi and giving you nostalgia and all that stuff. So he's hitting all the right notes for people to click through to his content. And I think his first video was about that, like just exams in college and how they used to like fuck with the warden and all that stuff. And that, I think, has like 20 million views on YouTube right now.
Really? People love nostalgia.
People love nostalgia, dude.
You know, when you talk nostalgia, I usually think about Sebastian Maniscalco's door bit. You know the door bit?
I don't know.
The one where he's like, you know, back in the day when somebody knocked on your door, you'd be so happy because you had guests. Somebody knocks on your door now, it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
So who the fuck's on my door, you know? And he like, that's a quick act out. And,
oh,
like,
yeah, I've seen this in the Comedy Store, bro.
Yeah.
The Comedy Store show, by the way, like...
The Showtime thing, yeah?
It's so good, dude.
Yeah, it's really so good, yeah? There's the link I posted in... we watched it illegally, guys.
yeah, I watched it very legally.
But that is Romanian, Indian. We have to watch things illegally. It's part of our culture, guys. Yeah. But yeah, it's a good show. And it's interesting, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, when you look at these, like, Comedy Store documentaries back in the day, that's why I feel like stuff like this now, you get actual, you know, insight into what's happening here, right? I was talking in the morning about like the current Berlin scene. It's like, you know, this is like, you know, literally like the 70s back in, even earlier than the 70s back in the US.
And it's beautiful that there is like footage of like the beginnings of scenes because it empowers a lot of other people. Like, don't underestimate the power, for example, of the Comedy Store documentary and what it's going to do to, for example, the scene in India, the scene in Berlin. Because I know for sure that I have friends who watched the Comedy Store documentary, mm-hmm. and they went, hey man, why don't I open up a comedy club in like not even maybe the biggest city in India,
right?
And I can like actually make this work, because I just saw this lady and how she did it. She basically started from nothing. She was Mitzi was the first comedy club owner in America, and it just kind of through happenstance blew up, right? And that empowers a lot of people in scenes like India, scenes like maybe Berlin, all over the world, to actually say, hey, if they can do this,
why can't
I can
it?
Do this.
Yeah,
yeah. So it's absolutely like that's how the transfer of
knowledge. And I think that the scene is also different now, because there's a lot more appetite for, you know, like you said, like Indian people love stand up comedy. What do you think that is? Like, why do they? Because, you know, it's you can't argue the fact that I think stand up has blown up more than anywhere in the world in India.
Yeah.
And obviously you have a lot of people, but what do you think the Indian people particularly like about stand-up?
Yeah, dude. So actually, like, to the point that you were saying that it has blown up, I think we were discussing this statistic right before we started the podcast, which is, I think Netflix disclosed that in India, about 60% of their visitors who come to Netflix actually engage with some form of stand-up content during the time that they're there, which is like 1.5 times the global average, 40%. So it's fucking massive. Look, genuinely, I think there's just a very big shortage of quality content in India that relates with the youth. A lot of like the powers that be in India are still like the people who are now in their 50s, 40s, all of that stuff. They're thinking from that perspective.
They're disconnected.
They're making like family-oriented shows, which like my mom and dad are watching. But what am I supposed to watch?
Right.
This was a question that, I mean, right now there's like a decent amount of content for me, because stand-up blew up, because a lot of these comedians actually, they started like producing like more like shows
closer to you in terms of age and like relatability,
like comedy shows as well. So they started actually doing like even engaging with formats like sketch and all that stuff. That's happened in the last few years, but there is still a big supply demand imbalance. So at the end of the day, it's just that the youth of the country was just totally ignored for maybe
this generational gap. The producers were older people.
Also, like, I also think, like, this really a blast of stand-up comedy culture in India that can also be driven by the Western culture, right? Because the youth in India is also a lot influenced by, I wouldn't say just Western culture, but a global culture.
Right.
And I feel like
globally, it is Western culture. We're not watching.
I was going to say, like, I think...
I'm being very modest here, but I feel like, yes, Western culture has influenced the youth of India a lot. And we understand, like, if you have a platform where people are actually talking about the topics, which needs to be addressed very well, but not directly, but in a funny way, why not talk about it,
well,
you know?
Well, why do you think, like, so I think that you know, obviously, you know, you were very politically correct to say global culture, but global culture is basically Western culture. It's like America and, you know, some degree UK. And what particular part do you think people gravitate to in terms of, like, that Western culture in India?
What kind of Western culture?
Because I think in Romania, for example, people like they like the music aspect of it, and obviously the cinema aspect of it. But in terms of the music, everybody likes the rap side.
So in India, it actually started with the music aspect of it. I remember as a kid growing up, the bands that all of my friends were listening to, it wasn't actually rap. Indians are like still too uncool for rap, maybe. But like, you
it's
know,
it's like Tupac in Romania, bro.
But like Green Day and Linkin Park and all these bands were like everyone's childhood.
You got a lot of emo Indians,
We're all fucking emo. We have a lot of trauma that we need to overcome. You know, living with your parents. So everyone was listening to these bands. Everyone was like starting their own tiny little band. So it grew from the music scene.
You got emo Indian bands?
Well, I've been part of three. But I've actually...
Sounds like you should bring that up in your comedy.
I actually did, like, I don't know, a Green Day song at a school event once.
Really?
And I was like, hey, maybe the music career is not for me.
Wow,
let me take a break.
Which song was it? It
was American Idiot.
Right.
And right after that performance, I was like, hey, maybe I should take a break from the entertainment industry. Age 13, I decided to take
wise
from the entertainment industry for like 10, 11 years. And I was like, okay, now I have hit a new low. And now it's time to start with stand-up. So.
But let me ask you, let's talk about this one. So you said, like, you know, obviously the entertainment industry, but like, you know, obviously everybody in India wants people to be doctors. That's my understanding, is they want to be doctors, engineers, accountants, that kind of stuff. What about career and entertainment? You know, is that something that people consider? Like, you know, it's, now stand-up is booming. Is it going to make it more legit? What's the story there?
It's getting more realistic now.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, it's not going to be an easy conversation, for example, with, you know, your family. It's still something that, I mean, it depends on who you are at the end of the day. When you talk about India, you have to realize that there are many different Indias within India, not just like regionally, but also because of the income divide and all that. So like for example, the poor people are living a totally different experience of India as compared to the middle class. And like the rich are having like a whole different like perspective on things. Like they've never probably been to a slum. They've never like, I say this as if like I am totally.
Mohit's came from the slum.
Slumdog Millionaire guys.
It's a story about Mohit's life.
That was me.
But okay, you'd be middle class in India
firmly middle class. So for me, like, I mean, I'm fortunate enough to like have very loving parents who like support almost every decision that I make. And I actually did tell them about the fact that, hey, I am actually like quitting my corporate job and getting more into like stand up, almost like trying to find a way to make this work full time. And they were very supportive of it. But at the same time, there is still an apprehension in their voice that I hear every single time. They're like,
try it out for like 3 months, I mean, you know, if it makes you feel any better, my parents think I'm doing IT consulting.
Even now,
yeah. Does that make you feel any better?
Hey,
what if they hear this podcast?
I mean, that's fine. My parents don't speak English, nor do they take an interest in my activities. So I think I'm safe there.
And I think if this podcast reaches Dragos' parents, we have arrived.
We've made it. Yeah, if this podcast, my mom listens to podcast, we've made it, guys. That's the goal. Yeah. When my parents find out that I'm not doing like I'm doing stand-up full time from my podcast, that's when we've made it. You know.
Dragos, can you tell us about like the last consulting gig that you did? I found that story quite interesting.
The meme making seminar or the other one?
The meme making seminar is interesting, but I mean, I can definitely like picture you doing that. The other one, I don't want to picture you.
So I was telling you about the consulting gig that I actually did, right? So I mean, this is a great win for me, because I think this is where you get those little kind of nibbles on the fact that you've made it as a comedian. Slowly, you're slowly making it. I had someone reach out to me recently to ask me to and paid me, not really asked me, just paid me, offered to pay me €1,000 to do a little project for them. And the project was to watch some of the porn they created and watch it and then react to it while I'm watching it. So they paid me for a reaction video to their porn so they could use that as an advertisement element, which is great. It's really like, you know, it's when 18-year-olds and 19-year-olds died in the Romanian Revolution for freedom. This is the freedom that they died for. You know? this is the freedom that they didn't know about it, but this is the freedom. You know, this is literally the freedom that they wanted.
And how long were the videos?
Well, they requested 20 minutes of me reacting, but I'm always, as an Eastern European, I'm always about over delivering, so I provided 60 minutes of me watching porn and reacting.
And there's 59 more hours still in production.
Yeah, so if you guys want some extra, if you want to do double cuts, if you want to like go for more stuff, like I am here for you. I'm about providing quality to my clients.
But as you said, man, like that's definitely like a sign of making it, you know, as a comedian.
Yeah.
When you start getting paid for things that you would do for free anyway.
I completely agree. Exactly. It's incredible. And you know, and hopefully, again, this opens up a whole new market. What else is there out there? You know, what other opportunities are there? Yeah. It's great that you have some form of, you know, financial validation for the thing that you're passionate about, right? Yeah. And it's always great to see that you know, you can put food on the table by watching porn.
I mean, I tend to not mix those two things together very closely.
You tend to put something else on the table?
I tend to wash my hands in between, but you know, you do you, man.
it's a hard-knock life, yeah? It's Corona times, guys. Wash your hands. But your parents are relatively open to the idea. Well, not open, but like they're like...
They are relatively open to it.
They're not opposed, which is a win.
They're like, we haven't had like... Like they don't know all the nitty-gritties of it.
Yeah.
But on a high level, they're quite supportive of it. But we'll see, you know, this is just like the beginning of the journey. Everyone is supportive at the start. But then when you realize that, oh, It's been 12 months and
nothing's happening.
Not nothing, but you know, still there's no like money on the table and stuff. You're paying suddenly.
That's definitely a great point. I don't know if I told you the story, but like for me, when I came here, I came in September 2000. Mm. I think it was 2018, right?
Yeah.
And the plan was to kind of hang around for 6-9 months and just work out an hour.
Yeah.
And I managed to finish the hour the first 3 months I was here.
Yeah.
And then the first show that I did was in Bratislava.
Yeah.
You know, the Facebook ads, the booking of the venue, and I got 23 people.
Yeah.
And I broke even. I made like maybe like 60 euros on the gig, right? And then I took an overnight bus back to Berlin. Yeah. It's fun times.
Yeah, dude, you inspired like a few comedians on the scene to do the exact same thing. I remember like maybe 3, 4, 5 different people who actually like looked at your format, booked the same bus that you did.
Yeah.
Like 3 months after you, maybe. And I think I was like one of them. Yeah. My friends visited from India. We did like the Sri Nobility tour and we went to the exact same bars that you went to.
Which just shows the fact that there's an audience, people will come, right? And people, and the thing is like the first show that I did in Bratislava, I made a little money. But I think the game changer was the second show that I did was in Copenhagen. And for that second show in Copenhagen, when I did that, basically I spent about like 100 euros on ads and made about 1,000 euros in profit, which was insane for the second time. It was insane. It was about 120 people in the venue for my second show solo, and I did not understand what happened. And then I did a bit of analyzing afterwards, and I found out what was the reason. The reason was my tickets were severely underpriced. But we, even with that, still made money, right?
Yeah.
Severely underpriced, and there was a lack of English entertainment in Copenhagen. Copenhagen is like one of the best places to do comedy, I think, in Europe at the moment, because it has a high population. Like, you know how here, maybe you say like, yeah, like maybe like 10% of the population here, like 5% is like the English native, non-natives, right?
Yeah.
In Copenhagen, I would say like maybe like 30% of the population is non-native English speakers.
Okay. So question to you, why are you not in Copenhagen right now?
Because it's Corona. And I've done, well, since then, I've done 7 shows in Copenhagen.
Yeah.
And they're all sold out.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, the Copenhagen is one of the best places for me to do comedy there. And, you know, the going from like, you know, 60 euros profit to like 1,000, you're like, okay, this is, you're like, that's a great validator, right? Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, I can probably do this more, just repeat more of this. How do I get more of this? Yeah. And then afterwards, you know, a lot of shows that lose money come because you do them in Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
But, you know, Norway, Sweden, like civilized countries pay you for your talents.
Yeah.
But the idea is like, you know, if you can get that done in these kind of countries, you know, obviously the next wave is going to come in the Eastern European countries. They're going to come, they're going to happen in maybe some of them, hopefully in the US, Australia, you know, Canada, maybe and even India. I think in India, like people would love to hear perspectives of like a Romanian guy coming to the comedy in India. Yeah. That's already a interesting point, right?
Yeah.
I would definitely watch that show.
Well, you should tell that to all your friends.
All your friends.
Yeah. I will definitely watch a show if a Romanian guy is performing in India.
Yeah, and I guess like this is
a different perspective.
Yeah, and it's like people not used to like, you know, seeing like Romanians in India or like Indians coming to like Romania doing comedy.
Yeah.
Like, people be like, oh, let's see what this guy has to say, you know.
Yeah.
I think even now, like I think just, you know, like, when I was growing up in Romania, there were like no Indian restaurants, but now they're like quite popular in Bucharest and people want to go have Indian food, you know.
Yeah.
So like, you know, why would they not see an Indian comedian, right? Because I think that was one of the biggest, like, one of the biggest kind of like insecurities I had before. I was like, why would people want to see a Romanian do comedy in English?
Yeah, dude, I mean, we have so many insecurities this way. Like a lot of times, what stops us is just our mind.
Mm.
Very interesting example that you mentioned about like Copenhagen or like some of these like richer European cities in general.
Yeah.
Like sitting here, we just believe that, oh, there must be a scene over there.
Right.
How can I possibly go and like, you know, outsell local acts or whatever?
Yeah.
But then somebody takes a leap of faith here, like somebody being you.
Yeah.
And you realize there's no fucking...
There's nothing, scene. There's
literally nothing. People are dying and crying out for like this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And the minute you provide it to them, they're like, oh, take my 1,000 euros.
Exactly. It's crazy.
Yeah. So it's literally like, it's like props to you for doing this.
Yeah.
But isn't it insane to believe that for, I don't know, the Berlin scene has been here for like 8 years.
Yeah.
Nobody else thought of doing this.
Yeah. It's crazy. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's because I think the reason behind it's like, you know, comedians just generally insecure people from the start, and it takes, you know, a big risk, financial risk. It's a reputational risk. It's a big opportunity to fail, you know. And again, people always like doubt themselves. Like, why would people want to? Like even now, I'm doing that. I'm trying to create YouTube videos and I'm trying to do, like current events. I'm like, you know, why would people care about what I think about Donald Trump?
Yeah.
And the question is, you know, people like a lot of people that I watch on YouTube, I don't know, you know. I just want to, I care about the topic, not the person.
And also like, because of some random video that you have created or you have watched, for example, you can learn by one sentence that a person has said in that video, and it can actually change your life.
Yeah,
you can learn something different from a different person who comes from a different country, for example, right? So it's a very important thing just to create a content in order to like inform people about certain topics.
I think this is where like the whole Gary Vee thing about like you just make content and you know things will come. It's like you just got to put yourself out there and see what happens. And that's why I feel like, you know, we're talking about like, you know, you're saying that there's an opportunity potentially to go back to India and do comedy there, right? I think, you know, Indian people would just generally be curious of an Indian living in Germany, what happened, what their experience is, and so on and so forth.
I hope so, dude. Yeah.
Follow Mohit Minas on Instagram and Facebook.
@ Whiskey Mojito on Instagram.
Yeah. Whiskey Mojito, guys.
Whiskey Mojito. Mohit Minas is some other dude.
Yeah.
More followers than me.
Is that another guy?
That is where my career is going.
Is that another guy?
Some fucking random Indian dude named Mohit Minas.
That's true.
Who has the handle Mohit Minas. And he has more followers on Instagram than me right now.
Statistically probable, but still hilarious.
It's a bit embarrassing too.
I mean, it's fine. I think Whiskey Mojito is cool. I mean, you should like, one thing that I learned is like, just try to make it as simple as possible for people to find you. Because my comedy page and my Facebook page used to be like Dragos Christian Comedy. But then people keep thinking I did Christian comedy, like religious comedy. They're like, what the fuck is Christian comedy? And I had a couple of venues refuse me to do shows there because they're like non-religious. I'm not religious, bro. Like, what the fuck?
Wow. I mean, with Whiskey Mojito, maybe like some gin lovers might refuse like booking me as an
couple of Russians. Like, no, we're vodka mojito. But yeah, I mean, okay, so let's talk a bit more about this. So you currently are thinking of, you know, potentially going full time in India, right?
Very seriously considering.
Yeah. Congratulations. I think just, you know, even kind of engaging with that thought is a great, great leap forward. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
As Mao would say, Mao Zedong.
Look, at some point you just realize that you just figure out that this is the thing that you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the sky sets clear
right.
a little bit.
Right.
And you just start working towards that purpose. Yeah. I think you have this background wherein you come from like a more startup sort of oriented scene wherein you are already having financial security.
Mm-hmm.
Same as with me. Like, I'm coming from a startup sort of background wherein like, I've been progressing well at my like job. So, post.
As Mohit is saying this, I'm noticing the Blitzscaling book behind him Reid Hoffman.
The Blitzscaling book has a context. Actually, my boss, like, soon to be my ex-boss because they fired me.
That's how I become a comedian, guys.
That's how comedians go. So he gifted me this book at the start of my stint back when I actually used to care about my work.
Right.
And he's like, bro, read this and you're gonna change the world together.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I'm gonna put it at my desk and we'll see what happens.
Right.
So it's just stayed there for a while.
Right.
And now my boss decided that I was not worthy of...
You're not blitzscaling enough.
I'm not the blitzscaling guy.
So. I mean, but the thing is, you should read that book for comedy. Because I was reading it for like, in terms of comedy and like how can you generate and grow faster. It's not super relevant, but it's some degree relevant.
Okay.
So you might find more value for your comedy career than for your...
I mean, certainly.
Like, I mean, for your previous company, which was like, let's say it's been blitzscaled enough.
Yeah, it's not been blitzscaling, actually. It's barely been...
Yeah, but like, definitely, I think for comedy, it's like... Because like, you know, how do you grow faster? But then a lot of times, it's basically what that book says is you have to ignore some things that don't work and just focus on the things that work.
For sure.
And just kind of like double down on the things that work until they're so big that they, you know, overcompensate for the things that don't work. Okay, so you, what's the plan? You're going back to India and you're gonna kick it up?
Yeah,
dude, comedy,
ramp it up. I mean, I am in a very blessed situation right now because the German government is gonna pay me unemployment benefits for a year.
Okay, for a year.
Which is like, I love Germany, love Angie.
Right, Angie.
Thank you so much for making it happen.
Shout out
to Angie. Shout out to your home girl Angie right here. But yeah, I mean, I've been working for a while. They're going to pay me for a year.
Which is your right. By the way, Paul, this is his right.
Yeah, it's my right. It's Arbeitslosen Geld eins. And so that gives me a lot of freedom to actually like do the thing that I want. To actually focus on the art of comedy.
Right.
Not just stand up, like maybe making sketches.
Sketches might be also a very good way to go for it.
All of that stuff. But I think there's definitely a like the point in time right now where I think we were talking about this before, which is the fact that for the first time in my life, being brown is actually a privilege.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is great, right? Yeah.
There's a big supply demand imbalance in my country right now.
For this particular skill set you have.
For this kind of skill set.
Yeah.
Let's hope there is some sort of skill set
here.
But, I mean, if it all comes to plan...
It feels good, right?
Privilege feels good. I mean, I was actually like... So, we've been actually like... With my friends back in India, we've been talking about different sort of ideas that we can do around comedy and all of this stuff. And one thing that I... Like, I mean, doing this sort of like... Oh, should we start a collective? Should we actually do sketch? Should we do like X, Y, Z? We actually read a lot of perspectives of what existing people are saying right now. And definitely right now, it's big, simply because there is such a big supply demand imbalance. It's Indian comedians are being on, like, I mean, if you talk about the comedians who still not made it, they're being paid more on average as compared to your standard American comedian.
Right.
If you specifically talk about, like, for example,
the lower tier.
Yeah. And gigs at like comedy clubs, for example.
Right.
Yeah, so like
that's amazing. That's
insane, right?
That's amazing. Yeah, yeah.
There is 100 rupees which make €1, and or $1,
right.
And the Indian comedian is still getting more for a club gig
than the
average American comedian.
That's amazing. Yeah,
which is insane to think of.
It's insane. Yeah, literally, it's literally like the in like what the fuck, you know?
Yeah.
Like, how fast has that scene moved that you can actually... Because, you know, you see, hear stories from, like, American comedians. They're, like, just struggling. They're, like, they have to pay to perform, right?
Yeah.
You know, the entry-level American comedian has to pay €5 for a spot or whatever. Like, there's a minimum. They have to get friends to come up to the shows and have, like, a minimum, like, two drinks.
Yeah. The entry-level Indian scene is also like that. But you can, like, sort of, like, progress a little bit.
Right. Because, again, like, the supply, demand, imbalance.
Yeah. It's still, I mean, exactly. It's exactly like that. Like, people in India want to come for something that... they can depend upon. So they come for recognized names and stuff. And if, for example, you're as an entry-level comedian, you're at an open mic where there's no recognized name coming and performing, you're going to have to bring plus ones to be on the lineup as well. So it's exactly the same as the American scene. But you skip a few steps on your growth trajectory if you're lucky and if you're talented enough.
So how much material do you think you have to rewrite for India now? Like the stuff that you have here in Berlin?
Quite a bit, dude. I was actually... So what I've actually...
Like this is like comedian talk, right?
Yeah. So actually quite a lot of stuff that I've been doing actually right now is that like I realized that like some of my bits were only going to work for Germany. So I've actually literally been putting them out online because they're not worth anything to
me
in India. And I actually might as well like build up my portfolio already before moving by actually having these bits there. I released a clip about talking to a German. Like 3 hours ago. And that bit is not going to translate no matter what I do.
Whatever you do. Yeah.
So there's a few bits like that which are absolutely going to waste. But that's fine. The thing is, I think, I believe that as comedians, like what we build upon during our formative years, maybe like this was a few years back for you, was just the skill and the knack of writing a joke about a specific topic. And once you kind of like develop that knack, you can, I mean, basically what you're looking for at that time is like topics that relate to you and topics that are interesting enough for an audience. But you can sort of build on top of that fairly decently. And there's so much random shit happening in India. There's so many things that you would notice that are like just
what is this?
Is that a thing in our culture?
And I think that's one of the advantages. You go back to a new perspective, right?
Yeah. You go with you like I genuinely feel that sometimes. It's just you start to notice how there are just like cracks in the system, and you're like, this was considered normal the whole time I was growing up, and when I like look at it now, I'm just like,
Like this is why I think like this is such a golden time for you to go back to India because he has understood the perspective from German standpoint of view, and also like for example standpoint, and also for example from international standpoint, if he goes back to India, he will notice things that not many people who are Indians are able to notice it very well, right? at the same time, I feel like if he shares some of his experiences mm-hmm. about the German culture, that will be mm-hmm. such a boost in India.
Mm-hmm.
Because I understand, like, sometimes my parents, like, if they watch this podcast or something, but I know that my parents send me these videos mm-hmm. of people who are just showing the vegetables. Like, these are the vegetables that we get in Germany. And right, it has got, like, quite a few views, right? So if he's sharing his personal experiences, like for staying for quite a few years in Germany and mm-hmm. sharing it back to the youth in India,
mm-hmm.
who might or might not be willing to come to Germany for a few years, I think that would be like a big boost for him, you know, like to expose that international. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you so much. But like you mentioned the word willing. To move to Germany, I think a lot of the youth of India will be very willing. I don't think it's a question of willingness. It's more of a question of Angie saying no.
But I think also the thing is, like, a lot of them would there are, how close do you think? Okay, let me give this from a bit of recount from my experience. I used to work for, you know, in a recruitment position for like a tech company trying to recruit Romanians into different countries in Europe. One of them was Estonia, arguably. But then a lot of people in Romania, they have like such a comfortable lifestyle at the moment because, you know, the middle class is coming up, they're making good money, that they would not leave their families and friends to go to another country. So what was I going to say? Like, how strong is the imbalance between wanting to be with your friends and family versus financial?
Yeah, dude, I don't know about like specifically Germany
mm-hmm.
because I kind of moved there on a whim and my story was a little bit different to like most Indian people and how they think,
mm-hmm.
but Indians are like world's number one immigrants, guys.
They'll
anywhere there is an opportunity, we will be there. And we will be opening an Indian restaurant. I mean, there is definitely like a big gap between, for example, German culture and Indian culture. It's definitely not. It's not the easiest country to integrate. It's not the toughest country to integrate. It has a lot of opportunity and all that stuff. But dude, like, there's so many people in India that actually would like to have this sort of lifestyle.
Right.
That I remember actually my lawyer here in Germany saying something to me that
it's a very privileged Indian person here to have a lawyer already in Germany.
Not my lawyer per se, but
it's like Mohit got into some trouble previously.
No, she's not my lawyer anymore. She was actually my work lawyer, and I am fired from work, so she's not my lawyer anymore. But I mean, I remember going to a visa interview though, and she said, "Look, like 3 years back, maybe." One out of every 20 people who used to come for this visa interview were Indians.
Mm.
Right now, it's 1 in 3.
Really?
So really? That tells you how many, like,
crazy
Indian people are immigrating to Germany right now.
So, okay, there's two ways to look at that. This is how many people are immigrating to Germany, how aggressive, you know, the brain drain is, right? How many Indians Germany wants? You know, because I'm pretty sure like a lot of German companies will hire a very skilled Indian person if they have the talent over like, you know, a person with less talent from other parts of, you know, whatever, Europe or Germany.
Because
they don't hire them because they're Indian. They hire them because they're good, right? So it's interesting. Like, it's the German Indian brain drain seems to be quite aggressive.
Yeah, it's getting quite aggressive actually.
But you know, like the visa that he was applying, I bet that it was not like any. He was in a really good position in his company, for example.
Before I got fired,
But this is what I would like to say. Like, it is also depends on what position the Indians are applying for, right? So, for example, maybe there are Indians applying for better, like, high-level positions, right? Maybe Indians are getting hired more for the high-level positions as compared to any... at least, like, in my company, we are not many Indians, right, for example.
Do you do any software developing?
No, I don't.
Look at that.
Yeah, no, two Indians, zero developers, guys.
Yes, exactly. Guys, two Indians, zero developers.
IT consultant, according to his mom.
That should be the name of your podcast, Two Indians, Zero Developers. Breaking stereotypes 24/7.
That would get actually. I love the new title. About his point of like Indians in Germany, I personally believe like it depends on like what positions Indians are getting hired for, right? I think it's more in the high level positions than like any. It doesn't really say about the count of Indians moving to Germany.
But the other thing is like, for example, in terms of like you know, Indians doing different kind of like software developer jobs or whatever. Like, you know, I think in Romania we had a similar kind of like. idea of like Romanians doing shitty jobs, right? Yeah. But I think that at one point, I think in the 2010s, the number two most spoken language in Microsoft was Romanian. In Microsoft.
Wow.
Number two most. So English was the first, and then you obviously the idea of like, you know, and then because I guess generally Romanians have like a very self-deprecating self kind of like, yeah, you know, we're going into steel kind of mentality. But like, you know, the idea is like this serious brain drain where like the best people are going to work for, like you said, higher level or like, you know, very important level positions, things like, you know, multinational companies. So the idea is like when you look at the visa statistics for Germany, yeah, they are getting the best people, you know. They're not giving special these kind of visas for like
Average Jitendra. They're getting.
So guys, follow me on TikTok.
Will get that joke. Only Indians will get that joke.
If you're an Indian, follow me on Instagram. Follow me on YouTube. I need the followers there, guys. Please do. All right, I think we're kind of running out of time here on this one. Do you have any closing remarks on this, Mohit? What do you think? What are your thoughts about the future?
Dude,
are you excited? Scared?
I'm definitely very excited because no better time than now, no better place than there. Mm-hmm. So it's a
it's great.
Maybe it doesn't like rhyme lyrically, but I do believe that
it makes sense.
In like personally looking back on like my stand-up career per se, it's been like genuine experience of. Because we're coming from a background of like slight privilege, wherein we're coming from, oh, okay, like I'm doing well financially outside of stand-up. It's just been a question of, okay, commit to this, you know, it's just been a question of commitment, just saying that, oh, this is the thing that I really, really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to make it work financially, but I will figure it out.
Right.
Yeah. And the minute you sort of like, I mean, for me, at least, like I had to develop that faith quite a bit that I will figure it out.
Right.
But there's no other thing that I want to do, and there's no other thing that I will do. So I kind of figured out a way to get fired from my job. Yes, that was intentional. And
cost cutting, guys. Yeah, you know, it's if you
cost cutting, you know. But yeah, I mean, I'm genuinely very optimistic about the future.
Mm.
Simply because I think beautiful things happen when you
have a positive mindset.
When you apply positive mindset to ethic.
And like I said, like I think it's a lot. The statistical chances of you winning are in your favor now because, like you said, like the market is ripe, the opportunity is there, and you know it's like I think it's not blind risk taking, right? You know, it's a bit of like it's smart smart thinking, right?
Yeah, it's still pretty blind, but.
Look, we're talking about this before we started recording. Like, realistically, like, let's say if you give it a year a try and you fail,
There's nothing to lose.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you still have everything still there, right?
Yeah.
You know, and you can only enrich your life by having tried, right?
Exactly. And I mean, that's all that counts. Yeah. The experiences in your life are all that counts.
Yeah.
Because you're not gonna take money to your grave.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And that's a great kind of note to end on. So, thanks a lot for being on the podcast.
Guys, you can donate and help us make some money.
Yeah, just subscribe to my Patreon. I haven't set it up yet, but soon. Mohit Whiskey Mojito on Instagram.
Yes, sir.
Okay, would you like to plug anything?
No, I'm just like super optimistic about his and your, like all you guys doing comedy a lot as well, because I am a very like dedicated follower of comedy shows.
Okay.
And I really admire what you guys are doing. Also, the messages that you guys are sending out.
Are you gonna sign up to Mohit's Patreon?
Mm. For sure, for sure. I think I'll be the first one.
Yeah. Maybe she's gonna be the one setting it up.
Perfect. So you heard it here, guys. Sign up to the Patreon for everybody. Yeah. But it's an interesting, brave time to be alive. It's a great time to be alive. So thanks a lot for coming out to this YouTube channel or whatever the fuck you're listening to this. And subscribe. Whiskey Mojito on Instagram, Dragos Comedy. And
Comedy
see you guys in 10 years when we're going to be massive. You hear that? Come to my show. I'm doing a show in 2028 in Bangalore. Check it out.
At my comedy club.
Exactly. It's Whiskey Mojito Comedy Club. Check it out, guys. We're going to be there. Okay. Thanks a lot. Peace out.
Hey guys, how's it going? This is Dragos, straight from the stage. Wanted to thank you all for watching this video. If you guys did enjoy the video, please do subscribe, like, and comment. And also watch some of my other videos. I've got a bunch of videos throughout this whole channel, so I hope you guys enjoy it. Thank you, and see you in the next one.